Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To You at Health Radio. When was the last time you were outside? Not walking to your car, not glancing at your phone on the porch. I mean, really outside. Sun on your face, eyes looking at something far away from the screen. If you're drawing a blank, you're not alone. The average American spends 93% of their life indoors, surrounded by artificial light, recycled air, pixels, and notifications. And then we wonder why we can't sleep, can't focus, and need 3 cups of coffee just to feel human. Most of us blame stress, aging, and of course being burned out. But according to our next guest, the real culprit is something far more fixable. And the prescription might surprise you. Doesn't cost a dime, doesn't require a gym membership, and takes less than the time it takes scrolling through your morning news feed. Joining me is Dr. John LaPuma, author of Indoor Epidemic, and he's here to make the case that your body wasn't built for the life you're living, and the fix is literally right outside your door. Stay tuned. This episode starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a board-certified internist, professionally trained chef, and regenerative organic farmer. A frequent keynote speaker, he has presented at TEDMed, TEDx, and at major medical institutes nationwide. He served as clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Chicago and teaches the first CME course in Nature as Medicine at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. He's hosted 120 episodes of Health Corner on Lifetime Television, and his work has been featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, NPR, PBS, Today, and Good Morning America. What a mouthful. He's been everywhere. Now he's here. We're lucky to have him. His new book is called Indoor Epidemic. Welcome to the show, two-time New York Times best-selling author, Dr. John LaPuma.
David, how wonderful to be with you. I'm so excited to speak with you today. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's such a unique topic, as I shared before we started. It's one that medical doctors rarely focus on. First, what motivated you to write Indoor Epidemic?
I myself have been, as you see, very much in the public eye and have needed a kind of break. And so I thought I would buy an abandoned nursery because I thought it was sort of static and it could continue to do my work. But it turned out it was fascinating and drew me in ways that I didn't expect. And I became kind of rejuvenated about what there was to do. A lot of my own sleep problems and burnout problems and other maladies went away, and I was fascinated about why. So I had to dig into the science and find and read 2,000 studies to create this new book, Indoor Epidemic. What this book is really about is that we've, as you've just said, removed inputs that our brain and bodies require for optimal function. And what I like about your work, especially your Germs Are Your Friend, terrific podcast, everybody go listen to that if you haven't, is that, you know, you challenge assumptions people have about their health. And that's really what we're trying to do here. We're trying to say, look, we're the first indoor species in human history. We've moved 93% of our life inside. It became normal to have a screen-centered life after COVID, but it's not normal. Your body actually reads that as captivity. And it answers with bad sleep and brain fog and weight gain and inflammation.
Yeah, I know you opened the book with that bold claim. You say, we are the first indoor species in human history. What do you mean by that, and why is that such a concern?
Well, we evolved over 200,000 years primarily outside. And especially with COVID, it's become normal to have a screen-centered life. It's a problem for two main reasons. The first is that indoors has a lot of micro-inflammatory excitations to the body, not just molds and mites and dust, but VOCs, volatile organic compounds, sprays that we kind of take for granted. We're often sealed inside. That's a kind of box for us. And that's not how we evolved. The other half of it is that being inside so much deprives us of the circadian rhythm biology that our bodies actually need to function. They're required biological inputs. And that sounds simple, bright light and fresh air and movement outside and distance, but they turn out to be pharmaceutical grade interventions if you know how to deploy them and you know how to time them. That's the real key. Timing these interventions, not just how many minutes, but timing them is the core.
Yeah, I know a jaw-dropping statistic from your book was you said sitting 10 hours a day can make you biologically 8 years older than your actual age. Can you share why and what it means for the average desk worker that's saying, what? What did he just say?
Yeah, that's not a metaphor. It's actually your DNA measured. 30 minutes of daily movement, though, outside erases that gap, erases that biological aging. And when we sit for that long, we not just sedentary, so our muscles don't move, but we deprive ourselves of our senses and of distance. You know, most people don't look more than 20 feet in front of them and at any given time, never mind looking at the horizon or the sunset. That sounds kind of woo, but it's not, because your eyes need distance like your lungs need oxygen. You need to relax the ciliary muscles that make your eyes scrunch, the temporal muscles around either side of your forehead that can give you a headache, because we're often in our current lives digitally saturated, especially sitting that much. And digital saturation leads to digital obesity, where you are like too much sugar burns out your metabolism, too many pixels burn out your brain. So sitting that long makes you older, it makes your real age older, makes your biologic age of your body as you're choosing to leave your life older in your DNA. But that's a fixable problem, as we'll get to.
Yeah, you mentioned the eyes. I read something that you mentioned the projected need for glasses by 2050 will be half of the planet. You're saying it's not the screens, it's the rooms. Give us an insight on this, pun intended there, insight.
Very nice. So myopia is nearsightedness. It's driven by sustained, close focus, dim indoor light. This is reasonably new findings, even published this year in February in Cell Reports. What happens is that by doing so much what's called near work, where we look at an iPhone or we look at a computer screen in very short distances in dim indoor light, most people don't know that indoor light is only 100 to 300 lux, and outdoor light is anywhere from 5 to 25 to even 50,000 lux. Outdoor light is 25 to 50 times brighter than indoor light. By being in dim indoor light in close focus, the retina doesn't get the kind of light input it needs and physically elongates. This is now 90% of Singapore. 40% of California is myopic. We're going to see almost 5 billion people myopic by 2050. And that doesn't sound so bad. You get glasses or eye drops and you're done. But actually, A, it physically elongates the eye. It actually distorts your anatomy to have this much near work. And secondly, about 20% of myopia turns into high myopia, which is either cataract damage or retinal damage or changes in vision by the time you're 35. And that's a serious problem and no reason to risk it, because what you actually need for this and what public health campaigns in Singapore are about are 2 hours a day outside reduces risk for myopia by 45%. Those public health campaigns tell parents to take their children outside and play without their devices 2 hours a day. But that's not the minimum effective dose for moving your own biology. The minimum effective dose that's daily is just 17 minutes. To reduce risk for myopia, you need to get up from your desk. You need to go to a window. A window is fine. You need to look at the furthest point you can see. If you can see the horizon, great. If you can't, look at the sky. If you can't see the sky, because you're in an inner city, look at a rooftop. Look at the building that's furthest from you and watch for 5 minutes. You'll notice things you haven't seen before, the shape of a cloud, the way that leaves move. You'll hear the sound of a bird that you might not have heard. And it will relax your vision. You're giving your biology the kind of distance it needs to do optimal work. This is actually neuro-optimization.
And you know, that makes such sense because the average person's, I mean, probably more than average, probably 95% go outside and they're looking at their tablets or phones. They don't look outside at the trees and the birds and the surroundings. So I think that you're like, well, I'm looking at nature on my phone. Not same thing, right?
Not the same thing, because your brain is using that cortical input. What you want to do is give your brain some relaxation. When your phone is your hand, your brain thinks that you are still working. Whether you're outside on the beach or you're on a park bench, it doesn't matter. Your brain thinks you're still working and you're not able to reset. Being inside this much has given us brain fog and weight gain and inflammation and bad sleep. We can fix that. My book is about how to do that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I thought about something recently. When I was growing up, the worst punishment my parents could give me was being sent to my room. That was punishment. Today, parents are threatening to send the kids outside.
Exactly.
Somehow the bedroom went from being a punishment to a preferred destination because that's where the gadgets are. And
that's
it's sad
right.
how fresh air and sunshine now feels like a punishment.
Yes. And so how crazy that is, A. And B, teens, up to like 60% of teens have a device in their room. And if you watch bright light before you go to sleep on a tablet, on a TV, on a monitor, on a phone, you have about an 80% reduction in release of melatonin. And that lasts for an hour and a half. So your quality of sleep is going to drop significantly if you watch TV. And about 40% of Americans go to sleep with a lamp or a TV on. You wake up between 12:30 in the morning and 6 in the morning and watch that bright light. What you get is an increase in risk for heart attack by 50% and increased risk of stroke by 30%. This is 90,000 people in the UK Biobank study published in 2025. And that's dramatic. Light, the wrong kind of light, the wrong kind of artificial light stimulated at the wrong time is actually a serious cardio risk factor just as much as smoking or obesity.
Yeah, so true. I remember years ago, Toyota ran a commercial where a teenage girl signs her parents up for Facebook because she felt sorry for them because they only had a dozen friends compared to her 950. And the twist, while she's alone staring at this screen laughing at her parents are out biking outdoors having fun with real friends. And my question to you is, how did we allow a tech company to redefine the definition of, quote, being social?
Most people don't understand that nature, in fact, is social. The digital screens have their place inside because they are good for us for doing cognitive work. You and I probably prepared for our interview using one. That's just fine. The problem is doom scrolling. The problem is thinking that the world on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer is all that there is. And it's so easy to do. They've made it so seductive. But because you eventually become saturated with those pixels. But what happens when you use your minimum effective dose of 17 minutes a day in a specific targeted way, especially near green or a blue space, near greenery or near water, what happens is that your brain changes. Your brain and immune system depend on regular exposure to soil microbes, plant compounds, outdoor air, natural light, and movement outside. So this neuroimmune regulation is something that is enhanced when you meet somebody. If you want to do just one thing, you should get 10 minutes of morning light before in the first 60 minutes of waking. What does that mean? It means you go outside, open window. If you're inside with a screen, better outside. But if you can't go outside for some reason, you can open a window and look through a screen. The window otherwise blocks the wavelengths that you need, as do sunglasses, by the way. And you want to go outside. And if you meet someone when you're outside, it drops your blood pressure, first of all, usually. Using a stranger is someone that makes your journey feel more personal and larger than you by yourself. And it enhances your oxytocin level. That's also true when you walk with someone. It enhances your oxytocin level and your blood pressure drops slightly, even better than walking alone. All of this magic kind of science happens when we're with other people or meet other people outside. That's why there's a whole chapter in the book about social connection and how important it is for us to be with another person or with a companion animal. There's another section in the book about companion animals and the benefits that they bring to us. as well as the joy that we get to share with them of unconditional love and they with us.
Yeah, I love your prescription. It's 17 minutes, not an hour of hiking, not a weekend retreat, 17 minutes. And people don't realize if you watch an hour show, there's 17 minutes of commercials. So just that alone. How did you arrive at that specific number? Is that enough to create that mood, blood sugar, blood pressure, improve sleep? Is it 17 is the magic number?
Yeah, that's where the biology begins to bend. It's 200 minutes a week, which is averages to 17 minutes a day. So it actually tops out at 42 minutes a day for the biological benefits. But again, this is very purposeful movement where what you're doing is there's simple interventions. For example, have a walking meeting outside. Most of our meetings are in conference rooms. And when you seal up that conference room, the carbon dioxide level goes up. Some progressive companies now have CO2 meters in their room because that CO2 above 1,000 parts per million reduces cognitive function by about 15%. It actually impairs decision-making by executives. And so much so that you can often improve the IQ of a room by opening a window. Nevertheless, what we want to do is be able to use this time deliberately. So have a walking meeting, preferably with someone. And now you're getting not just the microbial benefits of the air, many important phytoncides, which are plant chemicals that trees make to protect themselves and communicate with other trees, benefit our own immune system. The data about forest bathing is just remarkable in terms of its ability to lower blood pressure and improve immunity, the natural killer cell count that each of us has, which are kind of the Navy SEALs of white blood cells where they kill tumor cells and virus cells in your body, actually goes up by 56%. And that activity increase lasts for a month just by having the right timing and duration of forest bathing or being in the companies of trees. And you get some of that microbial benefit no matter where you are outside.
One thing you mentioned, pretty profound, you've shared research showing weak social ties cut survival odds in half, and it's the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So people might hear beginning, oh, so my glasses, I'll have a problem with seeing, I'll just get good. No, this is like death, correct? It's going outside can fix this.
Loneliness kills like 15 cigarettes a day. I mean, it's kind of the new 3/4 of a pack. Outdoor time, I think, David, is the most underused social prescription in medicine. And that's because physicians and clinicians of all kinds have not been trained in how to use it. It's also rather hard to commercialize. It's not a prescribable pharmaceutical, but it does have pharmaceutical-like effects. For example, I mean, we both, I think, love gardening, and that's kind of a high-density delivery system for these types of signals, microbial exposure, outdoor light, specific high-quality air, green movement all at once. Gardening actually functions, there's a whole chapter about it. As you mentioned, I do organic farming in Santa Barbara as a neurochemical regulator. It is a serotonin booster because there's a bacterium in the soil called Mycobacteria vaccae that helps your neurons in your brain and your gut generate serotonin as you garden. And it's an epidemiologic finding, but gardeners seem to have, long-term gardeners, have 30%, 37% less dementia than non-gardeners. So why is this? We don't quite know if it's because it's social, because of the serotonin boost, because gardeners eat more vegetables than non-gardeners and fruits as well. But we do know that this is a terrific season for gardening, that house plants are actually a threshold for outdoor gardening. And there's a section in the book on house plants as well, and their powerful effects on our own sense of mortality as well as our care of others. We've done studies of houseplants actually for offices as part of burnout prevention.
Yeah, I just wrote an article on plants and how science shows they actually have feelings and think and they know when you're there. It's like, wow, this stuff is not hokey pokey. This is legit. These plants really benefit us and they're like part of our livelihood. One thing that I like, you have a GLP-1 angle in your book that's fascinating. You're saying that nature works through the same metabolic pathways as drugs like Ozempic. What does that mean in practical terms?
In practical terms, it means it works upstream of most GLP-1s. So it hits some of the same levers that GLP-1s hit. It allows better insulin regulation because in movement, you're not only increasing blood sugar uptake by insulin, but you're also leveraging mitochondrial activation when you are in light and bright light outside. You are using your microbiome when you have your hands in healthy soil or when you're touching trees or other plant forms. That microbiome activity also translates to improved immunity in your metabolic system. It acts as an upstream lever. I think GLP-1s are very good drugs that many people are benefiting by and have excellent types of safety profiles as well, although there are certainly adverse effects for most people. But this is an amplification. The kinds of prescriptions that I offer in the book, the 250 ways to go outside deliberately to enhance your own biology and health, actually amplifies almost everything else that you're doing right, including taking the right medication like GLP-1s for many people.
One thing we briefly mentioned was air pollution. You know, most people assume this is an outdoor problem, something we escape when we close the front door and now we're safe inside. But research shows the air inside our homes is significantly more polluted than outside air. What's causing this and why aren't more people talking about it?
I think more people aren't talking about it because it's kind of invisible. And the people who are susceptible to indoor air problems often have kinds of canary in the coal mine profiles where they all of a sudden get sick and no one else is and no one understands why, but everyone else is healthy in the same environment. I think that it's one of the principal problems here are, as I've mentioned, molds and dusts and mites that accumulate many of the artificial chemicals that we kind of take for granted, fire retardants, VOCs, volatile organic compounds from paints and from furniture, you know, that off-gassing smell that goes away in a few days or a few weeks, actually still residual in many implements and objects in the home. There are many possible ways of trying to clean this. That includes everything from the right filters for heat and air to the right filters for water and open windows when you can, because that gets you better quality air. But I think we have a lot of work to do on reducing the inflammatory components of the indoor environment. And that can be as easy as opening a window, because as you mentioned, it's outdoor air is almost always 2 to 5 times more clean than indoor air, much different than what we've been led to believe.
Yeah. What about, since we're talking about indoor, EMFs, those electromagnetic frequencies, the Wi-Fi, the tablets, the smart TVs, the appliances, we fill our homes and offices with all these devices inside. Where does the real science land on these? And should we be concerned, or is it just something that's, you know, conspiracy?
I have not been able to review that science in detail. I did look at it briefly for the book as I did grounding, which I think is fascinating. It just didn't rise to the level of, gee, I need to write a chapter about this. But I think it's very interesting what EMF and other forces act as. As you know, David, almost everything, actually literally everything in life is a form of energy. And we're quite interested in where that energy is from. The recent discovery of an interstitial circulatory system may begin to explain why acupuncture is effective for some people, because the acupressure points seem to hit exactly where some interstitial flow now has been tracked. So I don't rule it out that EMF is a thing, but I'd love to see much more serious research that requires often a great deal of resources to be able to isolate it as a variable.
Yeah, I know you offer a 7-day outdoor reset. Can you briefly tell us about that and how the listeners can get that?
Yes, it's free. Come to our website, which is indoorepidemic.com. It's a simple one day at a time, just do this one thing to get people started. As you know, when we're starting from 93% of us being inside, small changes make a big difference. And many people are not really burned out. They're just indoors too much. The simple thing of using daytime before screen time and enjoying the light first and coffee second, all are part of the free 7-day outdoor reset at indoorepidemic.com. It just takes you through one step at a time. And if you like it, there's a book. We're doing a new course next month. There are a lot of ways to try to enjoy this and help yourself.
Yeah. Also, I know you coined the term digital obesity. I love that. And it's like, wow, no one considers that. Briefly, tell us, you know, where you came up with that and what's exactly getting overloaded? How does someone know they have it?
I can't quite claim to have invented it. I'm perhaps popularizing it, but it existed in the scientific literature in a more obscure place several years ago. I found it and thought that it worked in this context. Digital obesity is simply the idea that your brain is overloaded on pixels, that our attention span, because of our modern environment, has declined significantly. There's a neuroscientist at Johns Hopkins who's said that this is now only 22 minutes in a conference, when just a decade ago, it was up to over 60. And because we have so many digital inputs coming past us, it's very easy just to be overwhelmed by them, but not consciously overwhelmed, instead subconsciously overwhelmed, so that we glitch from one thing to another. We feel wired, but tired. We are not able to focus fully on any one thing. If that's happening to you, the fix is, there are dozens of them in the book, but a simple fix is to get up from your desk or wherever it is that you're looking at your device and go to a window and look out for a minute, an hour. Don't leave your device behind and just look out a minute. Look at the sky. You need a sky view, not a forest. Just look at the sky and watch the clouds change. Look at the different types of colors. If you have soil or an outdoor place available to you, that's even better. Go outside and arrange rocks on the soil or look at the different colors of grass or listen to the way that the birds are changing. It completely takes you out of your burnout phase, your overwhelm, and allows you instead your brain to reset so that you can go back inside and focus on the work that you need to do, because you are engaging your senses. We experience nature by using our senses, which are touch, listen, see, smell, taste. And we don't do that in cognitive work, but it is actually not just a balance for our cognitive work, but it's also a way to allow our brain to escape this digital obesity or this digital saturation and go back to a more potential for focus.
Fantastic. We got a minute left. Is there anything we didn't cover today that you'd like to share with the listeners? What can they walk away with?
I'd like to say that what you can do is turn some of the time you're already spending outside incidentally into medicine. So this is called minutes into medicine. Many of us are in a parking lot and walk for 2 minutes and try to park as close as we can. Park a little further away and notice something in the sky, something in a tree, something in nature as you walk. When you're outside for any reason, try to give yourself an excuse to park. If you're picking up your kid from school, park 3 blocks away and try to walk to noticing something green. Purposely go to a body of water that might be near your house, even a pool or a fountain, because running water at a fountain speed can change the brain waves that are from an agitated beta space to a more relaxed theta space as you go. That's one of the reasons that works for sleep. So many easy fixes. You just daily 17 minutes a day, move sleep, mood, focus, blood pressure, blood sugar, metabolism. It's really worth a try.
Fantastic. You know, on this show, I usually thank my guests for sharing insights, but you're the first guest I can thank for sharing outside.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed this. Everybody, get a copy of this book. It's called Indoor Epidemic, 93% Inside Steals Sleep, Focus, and Years. The 7% Outdoor Prescription Restores Them. You can get your copy at indoorepidemic.com. And while there, be sure and sign up for a free 7-day outdoor reset that we discussed and helpful other resources available like videos, articles, and recipes. You can follow him on Instagram and TikTok at Dr. John LaPuma. On Facebook, he's at Dr. John LaPuma. So TikTok, John LaPuma, and then add doctor in front of that on Facebook. You can follow me on Facebook at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard something today that somebody you know needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at toyourgoodhealthradio.com and peruse our podcast library. And as I always say, share these segments of interest with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. Don't be selfish. Sharing is caring. This information is too important. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.